Our next case this morning is 2015-390. The State of Ohio Ex Rel Cincinnati Inquirer versus the Ohio Department of Public Safety and John Bourne, Director. For the relator, Mr. Greiner.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, and Darren Ford is with me. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Again, Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, may it please the Court. This case and the next case on the docket deal not merely with government transparency, but with police transparency. Police are the branch of the government charged with the power to detain, arrest, and kill. It is imperative that this awesome power be exercised as transparently as it can be. We have seen over the last several years a number of police-involved deaths throughout our country. In two of those cases, Ferguson and Baltimore, we saw riots result. In other cases, Tamir Rice in Cleveland, Laquan McDonald in Chicago, Eric Garner in New York, Walter Scott in South Carolina.
Counsel, we don't need a recitation of all of that. Let's deal with the issue here, and that is whether or not it's a public record at all, and whether or not the power of the prosecutor and the folks who have to prosecute crimes protects it if it is a public record until such time as they're through presented, the prosecutor determines they're through with presenting their case.
Thank you, Your Honor. The genius of the Maurer decision, I think, addresses the concern you've expressed and the public's interest in transparency. The reason I say that is because in State Ex Rel Beacon Journal versus Maurer, that case stands for the notion that the record of the initial interaction between the police and the public is a public record subject to production immediately upon in unredacted form on demand. That is the holding for Maurer, and that is the genius of Maurer.
So your client can get the information that the defendant couldn't get initially until we changed the criminal rule?
The defendant certainly could get this information, Your Honor. This would not be excluded under Criminal Rule 16, and certainly the defendant, as a member of the public, would be entitled to make a public records request. What I think Maurer, and I think the reason for Maurer, is simply that the idea of the initial interaction between the police and the public being transparent.
So you're saying that's not part of the investigation. That's your bottom line, that the initial interaction until something occurs that alerts the police officer that this is a crime taking place and I've got to react to that and use my training and expertise and investigatory skills, until that is necessary, it's a public record.
Yes, sir. I think that's precisely what Maurer held.
Okay,
Maurer
all right. So under the scenario that we have, well, not the one particularly that you're concerned with in this particular case, but police officer stops an individual and there's the usual, you know, whatever police officer says. It's not like I haven't been stopped, but you know, I'm sure that it's different with many different police officers, but if then it becomes obvious to the police officer and they have their camera operating that, you know, there's drugs in plain view in the car, there's maybe a weapon, there's other things going on inside the vehicle that is being recorded, that is evidence of a crime, that is, would you agree that the first initial pleasantries, we'll call them, are discoverable? And then at some point on that tape, they are not, that tape is not discoverable until the prosecutor and the police ferret out the charges and the process of the case?
I think that the question becomes, at what point does the investigation begin? And
that's
my question by indicating
what the officer has come across.
Right. And I think that's the important question. And I think if we look at Maurer, we had a situation in Maurer where a person induced panic. I mean, there was, in fact, a crime in process, I think, in the graveyard in Shreve, Ohio, for 4 hours as police from Wayne County and from other municipalities attended that situation, interacted with that person, and ultimately, after 4 hours, the man raised his gun, he was shot and killed. And the court, and there were, in that case, 35 pages, including the narratives of the officers on the scene, including witness statements, all of which the Supreme Court held were subject to production and were not subject to the clear analysis, because it was from that point forward, really from the shot fired, that the investigation then began. But there was a 4 hour period where police were on scene. There was a crime in place, certainly at a minimum inducing panic, which the police observed.
Well, let's talk about today's case.
Yes, Your Honor.
First of all, why isn't it moot? Your client got the information, so why is this even a live case at this point?
We believe this case is capable of repetition, yet evading review, because the document, the record, is controlled in this case by the Ohio Highway Patrol, and so the Ohio Highway Patrol could release it or not release
and,
it.
And this was a high-speed chase, right?
This was a high-speed chase.
So from the start, we're looking at a crime, right? From the beginning of the video, when the lights go on the cruiser, so does the camera.
The officer
automatically, and the officer's involved in a high-speed chase. So we're looking at a crime from the minute the video starts.
The officer was dispatched and asked to, Officer Harvey received notice that there was a car traveling down Interstate 71 missing a license plate. When she observed that car, she put her lights on. When she put her lights on, the dashboard camera came on.
And the car took off.
And she began to follow the car, and at some point the car started speeding, and she, Officer Harvey, followed. Another officer, Perrin, joined the pursuit. That is not an investigation.
But she had the discretion to activate the lights and start the camera, correct? It wasn't just an automatic, it's not an automatic recording that takes place to show exactly what is happening all the time, as would be if you're saying this is an automatic record of what is occurring. She has the ability to turn on that camera or not turn on that camera, correct?
The camera comes on when the lights go on.
Right, but she activates the lights.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. Okay. She activates the light, but by activating the lights, that does not mean that there is a crime in progress. For example, she may have gotten a call that, hey, there's a traffic accident over on I-275. Can you get over there? Lights go on, camera goes on.
So we're talking about this case, and you're saying this case, you're entitled to the information. When she activated the lights, she's following a car that's in violation of the law already.
Yes.
No license plate. And then it takes off. So we've got multiple criminal acts underway. And you're saying that your client is entitled to all of that, and that the state was wrong to hold on to it until the case was over.
Yes, Your Honor, that's precisely our position, because it is not an investigation. The dash cam, a high-speed chase, is a high-speed chase. I mean,
It's evidence of the crime, is it not?
The law says investigation. The law doesn't say evidence of the crime. The law says it has to be an investigation. Maurer, the narrative statements in Maurer, the observations of the officers, there were four narrative statements from police officers in Maurer who observed what Mr. Huffman was doing in that graveyard during the 4 hour standoff. And that would be evidence as well. And this court held that those narrative statements were not subject to the clear exception. They don't even get analyzed under the clear exception. And the dashboard camera, which simply records the chase in this instance, is the narrative. It is just simply probably a more accurate narrative, but it is the narrative. It is not distinguishable from the narratives in the Maurer case. The police officers in Maurer observed what was and what became a crime scene. The officers driving the highway patrol cars, yes, were in pursuit of someone who turned out to have a number of charges against him, including evading the officers. But that was the initial incident, and the dashboard camera is the record of that initial incident. It is really
counsel. Let me stop you there for a second. I guess what troubles me about this case is, even if I'm going to agree with you, isn't this really a matter that needs to be addressed to the Ohio General Assembly? It just seems that they have defined what a confidential law enforcement investigatory record is.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully would disagree to a point. I mean, I think certainly if the Ohio legislature wants to take this on, they can.
I'm reading from the statute, and it doesn't leave a whole lot of room when it says, any record that pertains to a law enforcement matter, and it goes on. And it seems to me, when you're responding to Justice Pfeiffer, when the police officer turns on the overhead lights, which automatically turns on the camera, this has become a law enforcement matter, has it not?
Your Honor, this court has clearly ruled that 911 calls, including a 911 call in the Sage case that had a murder confession on it, was not subject to the clear analysis. This court has held that the incident report in Maurer, which has the narratives of four officers, is not an incident report. In those two examples, the 911 call and the incident report pertain to a law enforcement matter.
But,
so this court
but,
has.
But we've got some statutes here that are kind of conflicting with each other, do we not?
I don't
for
think
example,
it's statutes.
I think you responded earlier that the news media should have access to this video instantaneously, whereas the defendant's lawyer does not have that access, because once they trigger that Rule 16, another scenario has started, has it not?
Your Honor, I believe that the public has the right to prompt production of the record. I don't believe I used the word instantaneous. Obviously, in any public record, the public office has the ability to review it, to see if it's exempt, and that takes some time. But that's why the statute says prompt. I'm into my reserve
does,
time.
Does the pursuit by the officer constitute part of the investigation into the crime, in your view?
I do not believe so. And if
why would that not be investigative work by a law enforcement member seeking to investigate perhaps the reason for no license plate or the condition of the driver or other matters that are subject to investigation before any arrest is effected?
Again, Your Honor, I'm relying on this court's ruling in Maurer, which I believe is synonymous effectively with this. There were officers on the scene at the cemetery in Maurer observing this person's activity, observing a crime in place. Their narratives were deemed not to be part of the investigation. The investigation began once the shot was fired, once the police were able to come in and literally investigate. There is nothing, you know, the Ohio Highway Patrol, it's Joint Exhibit B in the record. The policy on pursuit does not use the term investigate or investigation.
All right, counsel, would the roadside sobriety test, in your mind, be public record?
I believe it would be, Your Honor. I know that would be at odds with the Miller decision from the 12th Appellate District. I think that case was incorrectly decided. And the substance of that case, this court never did decide. This court ruled sort of in an interim decision in Miller and sent it back, but the ultimate disposition never came up to this court. But I think if you look at the Stackman decision, where it lists a number of items that are not subject to the work product exception, it includes, for example, intoxilizer results as not being subject to the work product, that it is produced on demand. That's what the Steckman case says, as does the Steckman case say routine incident and offense reports, which essentially record the initial interaction between the police and the public in written form. The camera is just a different format. I'm sorry.
So you don't think that a roadside sobriety test is an officer investigating whether or not the driver is under the influence of alcohol or drugs or some other means that would deem him incompetent to operate a motor vehicle?
I think this court could certainly take that position. I think the Miller case went far beyond that and said that the entirety of the dash cam in that case was exempt. In this case, again,
well,
there was
obviously we're looking here and what we can parse out of a video. You want everything. Chances are you're not going to get everything. But the question is, at what point does the initial interaction morph into an investigation?
Your Honor, I might differ. I want something. I got nothing.
But you'd settle for everything.
Griner, you did get it, though, this case, did you not?
In May,
you got nothing, but you did get it.
We did, yes, Your Honor. We ultimately.
You didn't get it timely in your
view. You want it quicker. That's all.
No, Your Honor, this really isn't about timing. This is about
Well, Justice Pfeiffer's question was, if I recall it, why isn't this moot? You have what you asked for.
It
could happen again.
It could happen again. This isn't
but
about.
But the question is, you have it.
This isn't about timing, Your Honor. This is
what
about
is it about?
It's about classification. This tape is not, in its entirety, subject to the clear exception. The Ohio Highway Patrol
says this tape, right?
Yes.
When did you get it?
In May of last year.
When did you want it?
I believe it was requested in January.
March, wasn't it?
I think the event was in January. I think it was requested in March, perhaps. Yes. I'm sorry.
Counsel, I just took another look at Maurer.
Yes.
As I was not remembering all the details. I see Justice Cook dissented. I probably should have joined her. It was a per curiam. But the big difference is this guy calls the police and says, I'm waiting in the cemetery for you to come out and kill me. Mm-hmm. So he's committed no crime at that point.
He's induced panic. I believe he has committed a crime. Inducing panic, that would qualify for inducing panic. I think he did commit a crime.
Was he charged with that?
He was killed.
Yeah. So he says, I'm in the cemetery, come out and kill me. He's committed no crime at that point. And he hasn't committed any crime until he raises the gun. So the information that you're talking about there is information about a discussion that took place over a period of 4 hours when there was no crime being committed. So it doesn't seem to compare well with a high-speed chase where obvious crimes are being committed.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I believe inducing panic. I think it was a crime, and I think the police were there because it was a crime.
If that's the best case you've got, you don't have a very good case, in my view.
Thank you. Counsel?
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the members of the court, I'd like to start with 3 points. First, Relator says in its brief that no criminal investigation ever takes place before an incident report is filed. The statute doesn't say that. This court has never held that. And it's completely at odds with real-world law enforcement. Second, this court has ruled consistently that CLEAR's investigatory work product is tested against the facts and circumstances of the records in each case. Relator asks this court to overrule every decision from Steckman through Miller and per se exclude an entire medium, video, from investigatory work product. Third, the officer's cameras intentionally captured objective facts and observation, which is exactly what the Steckman court expressly added back into the definition of law enforcement investigatory work product. The Steckman court added that back in to restore the balance between the public's compelling interest in thorough, effective, and just investigation of criminal acts, and the public's right to inspect at an appropriate point, which is what occurred here.
Mr. Clark, could you clarify, though? We're talking about two videos, correct? We have Officer Perrin and Officer Harvey?
Three, actually. Officer Perrin's car had two video cameras, one mounted on the dash facing forward, one mounted in the cage facing to the rear. As a canine unit, it had a 60-40 split and a bucket seat in the back that was recorded throughout.
Well, let's
the chase.
Isolate those two cameras for the moment. Is there anything that could possibly qualify as investigative coming out of Officer Perrin's car?
As a participant in the chase, when he visualized and was aiming his car, and I'd ask the court to remember that this isn't the random turning on of a camera. This is a camera attached to a vehicle, which is being used to document a moving crime scene. So Officer or Trooper Perrin was part of that. In fact, the rearward-facing camera in the bucket seat was not really part of what was requested. In essence, a non-record, but it was provided because it's easier to provide more, to go above and beyond the Highway Patrol's duties and provide that as a package than it is to redact. And to pick up on the end of Relator's case there, that is incredibly burdensome and a waste of taxpayer money to try to parse out, as we noted in our brief, visualization of the sky, uninvolved vehicles, guardrails, and the like, or the very beginning or the very end of a chase.
Well, counsel, let me ask you this then. From your standpoint, are you saying that a State Patrol video cam of a crime is not going to be disclosed until someone has either been killed or convicted?
No, Your Honor. In fact, the way that this works in the real world is that frequently videos of such cases are released quite quickly. There's often a quick plea, a dismissal.
If you would, sir, define quite quickly.
Within
hours,
weeks or
days,
months.
Weeks, or months.
Yes, and you have examples before you this morning of cases that were 2 months and 9 days, respectively. These are not a parade of horribles of long-term withholding. When such evidence is actually used at trial, it's introduced at trial and it's available to the public. The agency has discretion, and in the case that's coming up before you after this one, the prosecutor exercised that discretion to release the video when they did not need to.
Well, I asked your opposing counsel, I guess I'll ask you as well. It seems to me a literal reading of the statute seems to indicate that the dash cam is a tool of investigation and therefore is precluded from the Public Records Act definition per se.
I would respectfully disagree. In fact, the confidential law enforcement investigatory records exemption is phrased in the Public Records Act as one of a number of exceptions that says the following are not public records. We're into the second part of the alphabet with that now. All of that phrase means it is removed from the definition of public record. And that means it doesn't have to be released, but it doesn't prohibit its release.
Do you say it's a law enforcement record, or do you say that it's an investigatory record?
It's a law enforcement investigatory record. Semantics being what they are here,
what
Your Honor.
What does the statute say as the as would keep it out of a public record?
That it pertains to a law enforcement matter.
Simply pertaining to a law enforcement matter is sufficient to exclude it in your view of the statute.
No, Your Honor. It's a two-part test. So the first part of the statute says that confidential law enforcement investigatory records are not public records. But there's a separate definition, Your Honor, of that phrase that is found at 149.43A2. That then provides a two-part test saying it first must pertain to a law enforcement matter, which is where an officer with enforcement authority suspects that a crime has occurred. And then secondly, must fall within one of the other specific categories, uncharged suspect, confidential information source, or as in this case, specific investigatory work product drawn from a specific case.
All right, now the inquirer would suggest there isn't anything specific about this to law enforcement, because any individual operating a motor vehicle could film exactly what the dash cam is filming were that vehicle driving adjacent to the officer's car.
But that would not.
Because it only shows what's in the public view anyway. And it doesn't record anything that is secreted or specific to law enforcement.
No, and this would not cover any such recording in a private person's hands. This is only available to law enforcement investigation.
Is this does it pertain to law enforcement in your view because it was recorded by the law officer? Is that what you're saying?
While it might pertain, and this court has found, for instance, in WLW TV, that materials that do pertain to a law enforcement matter, such as newspaper articles and copies of statutes and copies of court pleadings, they pertain to a law enforcement matter, but they aren't investigative work product. That's what we have here is a two-part test.
And getting back to that issue, when you're recording from inside the car, you're seeing one specific view. A person, a bystander recording, would have a different point of view, and anybody that's watched the NBA Finals and have seen the films afterwards, you see the different points of view that give you an entirely different picture. So we're not saying that's exactly the case here, right?
Private individuals are not a public office or public officials, Your Honor, so this just doesn't apply to them.
Are you saying, though, that any time an officer puts on the lights and the camera is activated, that is automatically investigatory within the exception?
No, Your Honor. In fact, that's part of our primary point is this is a case-by-case investigation. So when lights are activated on a cruiser in order to assist a stranded motorist, that is not a suspicion of offense, and it's not a law enforcement matter under the definition of the statute. The same with a mudslide or a dead animal or something else blocking the road that the officer lights up as a precaution. So it does depend on the intention of the officer, the intention of the office, which is expressed in the policy to activate cameras when lights go on, just as a automatically getting that going so it's not missed.
So if we compare the dash cam video to the next case with the body cam, do you see any difference, one being operated from a vehicle and one being operated from a shoulder mount or a badge mount?
Little difference.
Or is the law the same with respect to all of the videos in your view?
The same law would apply to both videos and to drones and to booking video and to any number of other videos that are taken by law enforcement. But again, on a case-by-case basis, depending on whether there is a suspicion of an offense by a person who has authority to investigate and they are documenting their inquiry, that's what makes it confidential law enforcement investigatory.
Is there a
record.
Timing sequence, in your view, as to when a video needs to be released or shouldn't be released?
Once it has become, as this court stated in Steckman and its progeny, once it becomes investigative work product, it need not be released until all of the legal proceedings are over. And in this, it matches the timeline of attorney work product.
And how do we determine when the investigative process begins?
That is when there is suspicion coupled with inquiry.
Counsel, you're here representing the state and the patrol, so their position is if it is exempt from public record as a confidential investigatory piece of evidence, at the conclusion of the case, is it your view under the law it's releasable, or is that at the discretion of the patrol?
It is utterly at the discretion of the patrol and any prosecutor that they coordinate with, and that's what happened.
When the case is over, even?
No, at any point in time, and again.
Once the case is over, it's still within the discretion of the agency or the prosecutor to withhold it?
Just to be clear about my terms, Your Honor, the case is over for purposes of Steckman when all legal proceedings have concluded,
right,
which would include direct and post-conviction appeals and habeas corpus. In this case, the plea ended the legal proceedings. So no, after that, the investigative work product exemption expires, although other
you're taking clear up to habeas corpus, so hence Mr. Greiner has every reason to be concerned, and his example of what happened in Chicago, where it took the city a year and a half to release something that was very damning and a powder keg kind of situation, which we get into. It can happen in Ohio.
Well, and I know this court is considering that issue in the Castor case that's
right
before it. That is not this case, of course. And I think it's important to note that Relator has not presented a parade of horribles from this respondent or from Ohio, but is reaching outside.
But we can consider the professional and good graces of the state of Ohio and the Highway Patrol and the Attorney General. But every little burg would have the same protection and could be very arbitrary in terms of what they decide to release as to when they decide to release it. I think troubling to me is when the case is over, to me, is at a minimum, it's when the trial is over or the plea is entered. And you're suggesting, no, we have to wait on appeals and we have to wait on, at the trial, the evidence has been disclosed or else it's not used at all.
I can only go by the court's precedent, Your Honor, and I understand the dichotomy you're talking about. Steckman addressed three main concerns: Rule 16, investigative work product, and trial preparation. And the Rule 16 issues that you've discussed that are post-conviction, for the most part, in Steckman as to what can then be obtained.
Yeah, but Steckman was before we changed Rule 16.
Exactly, and the 2010 amendments have changed that significantly. What has not changed is what the Steckman court described as this chaos that affected trial preparation and investigative work product protections while preparing for trial, and that is this case, in which you have the concerns of being disrupted in the process of trying to have orderly preparation, as Mikas has pointed out in this case, the possibility of affecting the ability to get a fair trial.
But do you think we want a rule where essentially it can never be disclosed? Because if you include post-conviction and habeas, you're into the world of never going to see the light of day.
That's very much a minority of the cases, Your Honor. And if I can finish the other concerns for up through trial, and this may be a long investigation, the integrity of investigation often depends on having facts about the offense, the crime scene, the timing, the location, that can be tested against new information sources. People trying to confess, people accusing others of the offense, people offering what they say is new evidence, and law enforcement has to be able to test that against closely held information in many cases. If it's required to be released, they lose that opportunity.
Well, counsel, at trial though, to Justice Pfeiffer's point, if the video is shown at trial, what is the sense? Well, I guess at that point, the newspapers isn't interested in it any longer.
Well, I'd hope if, and I take them at their word, that their interest is the public's access to these records for its own sake. So, yes, they should be interested in it. And what you've described is the MAD case, Mothers Against Drunk Driving versus Gosser. It was a case where a person requested records from the court clerk. It was not a Clears case. It was not a law enforcement agency case. And the clerk tried to withhold records of OMVI investigation, and this court said, no, you can't do that. It's been introduced into evidence. In fact, Leeds printouts in that case, which otherwise would be a felony for a law enforcement agency to release other than to a law enforcement agency, were also required to be disclosed.
Thank you. You've used your time.
Well, counsel, wait a minute. I do have you've raised something terribly interesting to me now. We started with instantaneous early in this argument, and now you are now into decades if you start talking about post-conviction relief. And are you suggesting that, for example, in answer to Justice French's earlier question, that even after trial, the second video cam that was not used at trial could still be withheld from public scrutiny?
That, I can only go by the rulings of this court, Your Honor, and they quite clearly say that they can't be.
I want to know your position.
That I understand, and I can't speak for my client or my office on this, but that I do understand, having watched the Castor case, that the law has changed, Rule 16 has changed, and in fact, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, amended Senate Bill 321 codified this court's decision in State versus Athon regarding Rule 16. So those considerations do change over time. You analogized as a court this to attorney work product, which is a healthy and useful analogy, and it may be that in the criminal context you have a different concern now, but I would argue that up through trial, those concerns for the ability to prepare without undue and unnecessary interference stand, just as the court found in Steckman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this court's precedent in the Maurer case is that a narrative of an initial encounter between the police and the public does not equal the clear exemption. The footage of that initial encounter that mirrors the narrative should be treated the same way. Your Honors, even if clear applies, you need to look at the second part of the test. And it's very important that that language says, does the release create a high, of the record, create a high probability of disclosure of specific investigatory work product? Disclosure means the release of information that was previously unknown or secret. Where the narrative is subject to prompt production and not subject to clear, and the footage shows the same information as the narrative, there is no disclosure. The release does not disclose that information. The record may contain that information, but if that's what the legislature meant, that's what they should have said. They said the release leads to the disclosure, and where that information is known by virtue of the narrative of the officer on the scene, the release of the footage, which shows the same information, does not constitute a disclosure. Thank you, Your Honor.
Is it because video is so ubiquitous that it can't be confidential? Is that any
well, Your Honor,
part
I,
of this?
I think that in terms, and this is probably more apropos to the next case, but the First Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals and the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals have held that the public has a First Amendment right to record the interaction with the police officer. So there's really no way that that interaction could be deemed confidential. I mean, it just can't be. But I think the point is, if we look at the language of CLEAR, where it says the release of the record has to disclose the information, and that information is already there by virtue of the narrative, then there is no disclosure, because that is not the revealing of information not otherwise known. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you can be notified of our decision. Marsha, we call a recess.